In Philadelphia, I'm Dante Toza, sitting in for Alda Bagato.
Got questions about your computer?
Mm-hmm.
Want to know about the latest electronics?
Yeah.
Are you confused by high-definition TV?
A little.
Well, tune into WBAI every Wednesday at 8 p.m. for The Personal Computer Show.
Yeah?
Yeah, that's every Wednesday on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh.
So why don't you tell a friend?
Well, okay.
And tell your boss.
Well.
Hey, call your mom and tell them about The Personal Computer Show every Wednesday at 8 p.m. on WBAI 99.5 FM.
Oh, okay.
I got questions about my computer.
And you've got questions about your computer?
Knock my coffee over in my keyboard. Do you think that's a problem?
No, not for me.
Well, it doesn't mean we're working right, Jimmy.
I'd buy a new one, you know what I mean?
Okay.
Like, really, you've got to be there. It's like the best. It's The Personal Computer Show.
But wait, that's coming up in an hour, and if you tune to WBAI New York, you'll hear that and more. Right now, though, you'll hear Off the Hook.
The telephone keeps ringing, so I ripped it off the wall. I cut myself while shaving, now I can't make a call. We couldn't get much worse.
And a good evening to everybody. The program is Off the Hook. Emmanuel Goldstein here with you for this hour-long program that comes your way every Wednesday evening, talking about the world of hacking and high technology, vanishing privacy, and various other odds and ends in the world that will affect you one way or another. Joining me today in the studio is Mike.
Can I just say that we have to get a promo like that?
That was a good promo.
That was a good promo. Yeah. We definitely should. But we need some people to come in, and we can do that, I guess. Also, Jim is over there on the other side of the studio. Redbird.
Good evening,
Walter.
Hey.
And Kevin.
Hello.
And Arsene, you've returned.
Yeah. Hi.
Where have you been?
Oh, I was in all sorts of places in Europe.
Really?
Yeah. And
gathering intelligence.
Well, you know, just looking around, walking around. Mm-hmm. Talking to people, stuff like that.
Okay, you'll be debriefed after the show, but okay. You'll give us some information for our entertainment. And Bernie S. joins us down there in Philadelphia.
Greetings from Philadelphia.
Well, you know, we talked about this a couple of weeks ago, and it's almost as if we caused it to happen, but we didn't. I know we didn't. It wasn't our fault. We talked about the television station that is banned in this country, or supposedly banned in this country, and I basically issued a public challenge over the airwaves for someone to prove to me that this station is actually banned. And, well, I guess that came last week when this poor guy in Brooklyn was arrested. Actually, he lives in Staten Island. He had a Brooklyn storefront. He was arrested for providing the television station Al-Manar, which basically in Arabic means the beacon. That television station is apparently owned and operated by Hezbollah. And the TV station was actually designated a global terrorist entity by the United States Treasury Department in March of this year. It's interesting how a TV station can be considered a global terrorist entity. There are some networks I would like to have categorized as such. What's interesting about this was that they've been following this guy since February. You get the weird part here? It was designated in March. They were following him since February. So something is kind of wacky there. But this was on every news channel last week. Every television channel had it was the top story. This guy was providing terrorist support, and all his neighbors are like, well, you know, he seemed like such a nice guy, you know, friendly, waved to you and everything like that. I sure hope this isn't true, because if this is true, I couldn't stand to even be in the same city as this person. And I'm asking myself, what is it exactly that they're objecting to? The fact that he's providing access to an alternative voice or something like that.
But, you know, I did see interviews on mainstream media where people were skeptical about it and they said, you know, we know the guy and...
They were skeptical about whether or not he actually did it.
Right.
But I'm saying, so what if he did it? So what if he provides a television channel that we think is controversial or objectionable? You know, a couple of weeks ago, we even gave out a web address where you could click and listen. And if I'd remembered to bring it, I would be clicking on it now and playing it over the air, but maybe next week.
Oh, no.
Yeah.
The thing that I'm unclear on is if he actually gave any money at all to Almanar in payment, or if it's just a free-to-air thing and he told people how to point their satellite.
That's the thing. If he didn't pay them anything, there is no case here. No case at all, because he's not providing any support to them. All he's doing is distributing information. And last I checked, that is not illegal to distribute information.
The guy's name is Javed Iqbal, I-Q-B-A-L. And interestingly enough, his store is someplace where I go buy weekly. So if you'd like to patronize this guy, which I think is a great idea, he has a Dish Network installation and rental whatever business. He's an agent for Dish Network. It's at 68th Street in Fort Hamilton Parkway in Brooklyn. So, you know, go there, and the poor guy had to put up his Staten Island home for to make bail. And it's kind of a weird case because they have a undercover agent or operative going to him and saying, I want Al Jazeera. And he says, well, wouldn't you rather have Almanar? And that seems to be the heart of the case. And like Emmanuel says, it's unclear as to whether any money was ever paid to Almanar. But what's more interesting is the law seems to have an exemption, and he should not have been charged.
What was this exemption?
The exemption covers publications, films, posters, phonograph records, photographs, microfilms, microfiche, tapes, compact discs, CD-ROMs, artworks, and newswire feeds. Would not a TV news station, even if it's run by Hezbollah, be a newswire feed?
Microfilms? That sounds kind of
well, the point of this is that the exemptions are for scholarly purposes. You can buy the Cuban Medical Association's journal. You can subscribe to it. You can get other things from Cuba and other nations that you know, used to be communist, and we were very hostile to them in the 50s, 60s, 70s, 80s. And there were exemptions for it, but somehow Almanar seems to be the only thing that you can't legally get.
And you know, now I want it more than anything. I can't understand a single word on the channel because it's all in Arabic, but I mean, this has gotten to a new and pretty scary stage. As one of his lawyers says, it's like the government of Iran saying, we're going to ban the New York Times because we think of it as a terrorist outfit, or China trying to ban CNN. And if something like that were to happen, we'd be screaming bloody murder over it. It's got nothing to do with whether you agree with what's being said or not. It's a question of making up your own mind.
It does happen, and we do scream bloody murder over it.
All right. Well, there you go. But there's also this little bit of information. Court papers filed by the government to obtain the warrant to search Mr. Iqbal's business and home suggested the authorities learned that certain high-definition global transmission systems were providing access to Almanar broadcast in the United States. They got their information from Mark Dubowitz, who heads a Washington-based policy group that has monitored Almanar through a project called, get this, the Coalition Against Terrorist Media, and campaign for its removal. Dubowitz said in a telephone interview that Almanar's programming includes very explicit calls for violence.
Wait. You're probably going to say this, but how does Dubowitz watch Almanar?
Ah, good question. I think maybe we should be investigating him. The thing is, you can say explicit calls for violence. What's support for a war? Is that not an explicit call for violence? I see that all the time on every channel. Okay.
Well, watch less TV.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It's scary out there. But
listen to WBAI.
It wasn't our fault. It wasn't our fault. We brought attention to Almanar. It's just bizarre timing. And if anybody does have that URL that allows you to listen to Almanar live on the internet, I'll play it. I will. I'll play it because, you know, we're not violating their copyright because they're not in the country. If you clicked on a radio station inside this country, I think they might get upset. But they're in Lebanon.
Lebanon might be part of the Berne Convention.
Well, I guess we'll find out, won't we?
Yeah, that would be exciting if Almanar sued us.
As long as they don't utter any obscenities, I think
violating
okay.
International copyright laws and the Espionage Act, two laws at
we're
once.
We're not violating the Espionage Act.
That's what this is.
Well,
I'm sorry. It is the International Emergency Economic Powers Act.
How about this? How about if we don't broadcast it, but simply translate it and read the words over the air in English?
Who in this room knows Arabic?
Well, not in this room, but we'll find find people. We know people.
We know lots of people. Actually, we do.
We know plenty of people. Bernie, this is chilling, isn't it?
Very. I mean, if it's a news channel, I thought we had a. I don't know if this would fall under a First Amendment under freedom of expression, since you're not even expressing yourself. You're simply listening to what someone else is expressing. And I don't know if there's any precedent for this, because for decades, stations like Radio Moscow and Radio Pyongyang in North Korea broadcast international shortwave news broadcasts, beamed it to North America, and people listened to it.
That's interesting.
You got to take it with a grain of salt, right. like you would the Voice of America, for that matter. But you know, as far as I know, nobody's ever been prosecuted for simply listening to a news channel.
And no one's being prosecuted in this case just for listening or watching, as far as I know. However, I think it is kind of scary when you realize that the people who did this, the government investigators, prosecutors, now have all the records of the people who subscribe. So if you do get that channel, they know who you are, they know where you live. But the interesting question I had for you was, you mentioned shortwave and Radio Moscow. Does Al-Manar, does Hezbollah, do they have any shortwave stations?
You can pick up broadcasts at the U.S. government. You can pick up international shortwave broadcasts. If you go to, there's a great website. It's called, I'll think of it in a minute, but I can't think of it. But there's plenty of shortwave, English shortwave broadcasts from countries who the United States would prefer you not listen to it. I guess what it comes down to here is if this guy was supporting this so-called terrorist organization by somehow getting money back to them. But I doubt very much that a propaganda channel like this, just like Fox News for that matter, is not making itself freely available.
Yeah, well, I think our listeners, a lot of our listeners who are into Big Dish TV and things like that will be able to tell us, is this something that was not being scrambled? Was it free to air? And if so, yeah, there's no case here.
Now, what this has to be equated to is not just viewing it, but selling the equipment, and that's what he's being prosecuted for, selling the equipment to receive the broadcast.
But that equipment can receive all kinds of channels.
Right. So what you equate it to is for example, any other store, Radio Shack or any of the popular electronics store selling shortwave receivers, right? Mm-hmm. What's wrong with that? And it's being used for the same purpose. So it's just kind of this bizarre situation where he's not doing anything. He's selling the equipment to receive the broadcast.
And one other thing, if it is possible to get this without paying a fee, believe me, we are going to give out information as to how you can set up something on your roof without having to go through a middleman and receive this yourself. And that'll prove again that this guy didn't have to pay anybody money to get this.
Emmanuel?
Yes.
How much you want to bet this is going to really backfire on the U.S. government? Not only are they probably not going to get a conviction to stick on this, but they're going to make millions of people aware of a TV channel that they didn't even know about in the first place, Al-Manar, mm-hmm. and people are going to be curious. It's just like when you ban a book and tell everybody, this book title is banned. People are going to be curious and want to find out what it is. It's like the best marketing ever, and it's again, you know, an example of the U.S. government shooting itself in the foot and trying to keep information away from the public.
Yeah, and hitting us with some of the shrapnel in the process. But if you check the audio archives of this radio program, I think you'll find that the words Al-Manar were never uttered before a couple of weeks ago when somebody mentioned that it was outlawed.
One thing that the U.S. government may succeed in doing is making service providers afraid to install dishes that can be used to receive the service, and most people don't have the technical know-how to obtain a satellite dish and mm-hmm. and aim it and whatever else you have to do to make it work. So they may succeed in making it hard to get this channel if the resellers won't do it anymore.
And we're coming to the stage where we'll have to have a list of approved channels that we're allowed to watch. Oh, boy. Okay, moving on. This is a breaking story. The headline, hackers steal AT&T customer info. At least now we know who's responsible. It's not them losing it. It's not them mishandling it. It's the hackers again. Personal data, including credit card information of thousands of AT&T customers, was stolen by hackers over the weekend, according to AT&T, late Tuesday. It's great how they can just point the finger at a group of people and say they did it, and it turns into a news story. The breach, which affected customers who purchased DSL equipment through AT&T's web store, was discovered within hours, and the online store was shut down immediately, AT&T said in a press release. They also said they were sending notifications to nearly 19,000 customers, and you know what comes next. They would pay for credit monitoring services for the affected customers for a year, and then they have the option to renew and pay money for that. Unbelievable. We recognize that there is an active market for illegally obtained personal information, said the chief privacy officer for AT&T, Priscilla Hill Ardoin. We are committed to both protecting our customers' privacy and to weeding out and punishing the violators. We deeply regret this incident, and we intend to pay for credit monitoring services for customers whose accounts have been impacted. We will work closely with law enforcement to bring these data thieves to account. What do you think, Jim?
The details of this story put to the lie the assertions that AT&T makes that it's not their fault, it's the hackers. You didn't read in that wire dispatch the bit about it's only those people who bought DSL equipment who were able to have their credit card numbers hacked. Anybody else who bought other things only, their credit card information is still totally intact and apparently totally safe. In other words, the hackers went along this little mall trying doors and finally found the one that was unlocked at the DSL kiosk. AT&T forgot to lock the DSL kiosk. This is AT&T's fault.
What do you think, Bernie?
Oh, I got to agree with Jim. I mean, AT&T is blaming people without even knowing who the people are. And I just think there's a lot of irony here because AT&T's statement saying we're committed to both protecting our customers' privacy and to weeding out and punishing the violators is maybe they should look at them in the mirror because wasn't it just recently that AT&T sold out the privacy of all its customers to the NSA? So clearly the AT&T is not that concerned about its customers' privacy if they're going to not protect it adequately and give it away to government agencies which have been, according to a federal judge, broken the law.
But beyond all that, just being able to say categorically, these are hackers that did this. What's this got to do with hacking? Somebody simply found something that was wide open and downloaded information. Anybody can do that.
It's actually pretty insulting because, I mean, it totally undermines everything that, you know, the term hacker actually stands for, which is, you know, much more intellectual than just finding an open door and seeing what's behind it.
Absolutely. Okay, continuing along the legal front here, a man was sentenced to 3 years in prison last Friday for launching a computer attack that hit tens of thousands of computers, including some belonging to the Department of Defense, a Seattle hospital, and the California School District. Christopher Maxwell of Vacaville, California, was also sentenced to 3 years of supervised release. He pleaded guilty in May to federal charges of conspiracy to intentionally cause damage to a protected computer and conspiracy to commit computer fraud. Maxwell and two juvenile co-conspirators were accused of using botnet attacks, which are programs that let hackers, again, infect and control a computer network to install unwanted internet advertising software, a job that earned them about $100,000. Well, first of all, what do you guys think of the sentence? Anything? No? Nothing? No comment at all?
Well, it's a pretty big sentence, but I mean, yeah, this guy is a criminal. I don't know if 3 years is too much or whatever. Maybe they should have fined him or given him a job.
How did he make $100,000 at this? That's what I don't get.
You know, there might be some shady agencies.
It's interesting how this sort of stuff works because obviously advertising is what pulls in a lot of money in a lot of these cases, and people are willing to pay to, without the user's consent, infect their machine with spyware and malware and other stuff that forces them to view advertisements that they, you know, have no intention of.
But that sounds like what happens every day in mainstream internet with quote-unquote legitimate firms.
Well, it also happens with legitimate firms and using advertising on their web page, which is a piece of material that you're requesting as opposed to what happens when you've got a malware infection where you're not requesting this information and they have full control over your machine.
Have you ever had a malware infection? Anybody here?
I'm sure everyone here has witnessed many.
I haven't. I mean, what's the symptoms of malware infection?
there's lots of things you can find a lot of processes running on your machine that, you know, you have absolutely no idea what they mean.
That's called Mozilla.
No. The symptom is all these windows always popping up that have ads in them when you don't visit any websites at all.
That's a very bad case of relatively old-fashioned malware. More modern ones will pop up just a limited number of windows.
When you're not opening anything else, they pop up. Right. I've never experienced that.
You're very lucky, very fortunate.
I just don't download things or open attachments without knowing what they are.
That tends to be what infects you, yes.
The salient point is that there's lots of people who know less about computers than you do and get this thing.
That's actually one of the problems here is that the user competency isn't high enough to prevent these sort of things. But every once in a while, there's attacks that can be done on machines where no user interaction is required, and mm-hmm. these infections can still pop up.
I mean, it seems this guy obviously is not a good person, but at least not in this particular case. But I question sending someone to prison for 3 years for basically jumping on the greed bandwagon, which is what a lot of companies are doing by bombarding you with advertising and spyware and all sorts of nasty things like that.
I don't know if I necessarily agree with that at this point. I mean, at this point, everybody's well aware of the consequences of this sort of action, and it's certainly not something that's legitimate by any means. So I don't know. I mean, maybe a long time ago when this sort of stuff wasn't very common. Mm-hmm. You know, it's unclear, but now I think it's relevant enough where you can say this is obviously on the wrong side of the quote unquote law.
But this question, you know, prison as the answer for almost every infraction. Barney, what do you think?
Well, in one argument, it could be said it's a deterrent, but whenever there's millions of dollars to be made out there, people are going to try to make it, and regardless of what deterrents there are out there. So this is one person out of hundreds of thousands that is being prosecuted, and I can guarantee that this one person being prosecuted isn't going to make a dent in the problem. So there needs to be a better solution. I don't know what it is, but locking people up for years and years, it's like picking one piece of sand off the beach. To prevent it from being washed back into the ocean. It's ineffectual.
And you should, you know, only put that grain of sand away if it's a threat to all the other grains of sand on the beach, I think. And I don't know, is this guy going to...
This analogy is getting more and more strained.
Well, it's a pretty silly picture, just putting people in prison for infecting computers with malware and things like that, I think.
When the tide comes up, the analogy is all wet.
Right. Here's another story. A Florida man who made millions of dollars selling illegal copies of computer programs was sentenced also on Friday to 6 years in prison in one of the largest U.S. software piracy cases. Danny Ferrer of Lakeland, Florida, pleaded guilty in June to conspiracy and copyright infringement charges after an FBI investigation of his website, buysusa.com, BUYSUSA.com. He also was ordered to pay more than $4.1 million in restitution to Adobe, Autodesk, and Macromedia, Inc. Ferrer bought numerous airplanes, a fighter jet simulator, a Lamborghini, a Hummer, and other luxury vehicles with his profits. U.S. District Court Judge T.S. Ellis, but boy, what a good name. Ordered the items be sold to pay restitution in the case. I guess when you start buying airplanes, that's a good sign that this is definitely a master criminal at work here.
Well, I mean, in this case, I don't know if I necessarily believe the numbers as far as what these companies have lost due to his sales of pirated software.
Bought airplanes, though. But, by airplanes, no, they must have lost something.
So we've proven that, like, Bill Gates is indeed a criminal?
No.
Because that's something I say a lot, but it's not very commonly held.
No, this is a different topic, though. He's obviously making a profit off of selling pirated software, obviously. Mm-hmm. And maybe the numbers are inflated as to how much the company's actually lost, because it's not clear whether or not those people would have purchased legitimate copies anyway. But this is a case where he obviously did something that was illegal, and I wouldn't be surprised at the jail time.
Yeah, with the numbers, it's not the case of someone downloading a copy of BSD or Red Hat Linux, where they charge you for everything, including the typewriter that was typed on. It clearly the people that bought this would have bought the commercial copy in most instances. So the loss is pretty equivalent to what he actually earned.
Listen to what the judge had to say to him before sending him away. You extended your hand into the pockets of these people. If severe penalties were not attached, people would line up from here to Los Angeles to do what you've done. And he said that from Alexandria, Virginia, so that's a very long line.
I don't know. I think this guy has caused less harm than the other guy who only got half as much jail time.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I don't really know. I don't really want to be advocating sending people to prison or not, but something's wrong.
Anyway, the software looked legitimate to consumers, but was deeply discounted, and it had been going on since 2002. So, yeah, it's interesting. But, again, I don't know. Prison, I think, should only be reserved for those people that are a definite threat or have done something really horrible. And maybe in this case, I don't know. The jury's out on that. 6 years is an awful long time, though.
As far as I can tell, all this guy did is make it more difficult for Macromedia or whoever to sell their software, even accepting the government's line that he actually caused damage to Macromedia.
Mm-hmm.
But
he sold their software.
Yeah.
You see, he took the credit for their software and kept the money. That's one step beyond just making it available.
Yeah, like, I'm not saying he should do that, but it it seems very little actual harm happened.
Well, you can argue that he took sales directly away from Macromedia.
And also, what happens if the consumer believes this to be real Macromedia or whoever's software and then has a problem with it, okay?
Mm-hmm.
He would call up the help desk and they would say, wait a minute, this isn't a legitimate piece. Perhaps shut it off. Consumers irked. Companies irked. People are out of money.
It seems that's a great way to catch the guy, too. If
that would, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
And that's actually a really good description, because who's actually at loss right here is the consumers who don't have legitimate copies of the software, and when they go for upgrades and when they go to register the software and all this other stuff, they're the ones who ultimately get screwed. So,
okay, continuing along, an update to the story we read last week. Dutch authorities have released 12 men arrested on suspicion of terrorism after causing a disturbance on a Northwest Airlines flight last week. They were suspected of trying to commit an act of violence on a plane, which could endanger the safety of that plane and the people on board, said a statement from the prosecutor's office. They were passing cell phones around, and one person didn't have their seatbelt on.
Why were people passing cell phones around?
You know, it doesn't say, and I'd like to know, but basically they say they pulled out cell phones and appeared to be trying to pass the phones to other passengers. And they were also, I believe they were Indian, and that added to it.
But it was a flight to India,
where
I imagine most of the people.
Even so, you have to be very careful, because it looked very suspicious and it made a lot of people nervous. I think what happened was, I think they bought cell phones and they were passing them around to compare them to say, hey, look what I bought when I was in Amsterdam.
I think the next time two of us or more are on a plane, we pass our cell phones around and copy off each other's address list by hand and see what happens.
Well, if I'm on a plane at the same time you are, that's enough of a shock for me. So we'll just leave it at that. Meanwhile, someone sent in a link to a site for a T-shirt. I mentioned last week I'd like to wear a T-shirt on an airplane that says peace or something in Arabic. And they sent me this link to itsnotallbad.com/IamNotATerrorist, which is the phrase in Arabic that is on these T-shirts. I am not a terrorist in Arabic. You know, it's a great thing. You can get the shirt at that website, but that's not really what I wanted to do. In fact, I think as soon as, like, we've had this discussion before, as soon as you inject the word terrorist anywhere in an airplane situation, it just, people get all weird and wacky. I'd like to just leave it at the Arabic and have a nice word like peace, you know, something like that, or any kind of word. But when you put terrorism on there, all bets are off.
The news an hour ago on this very radio station, WBAI New York, featured someone being taken off a plane for wearing a shirt that in English and Arabic said something like, we will not be moved.
That's all it said?
Something similar. I don't think that's the correct quote exactly, but I was just so stunned and incensed.
Is this the same story reported last week where the guy's shirt said, we won't be silent?
That may be.
This news. I hope it's a new story, because otherwise the news is a week out of date.
Played last week's news by accident. That's always possible. Okay. We'll be taking phone calls in just a little bit at 212-209-2900. And again, our email address is oth@2600.com. We love to hear your bits of commentary on things that we have to say and various other things. You see this thing in the New York, actually AM New York. You hear that newspaper? It's a free newspaper that's handed out.
Forcefully handed out. Sometimes.
Someone just handed this to me, and it was hilarious. It was a correction, and apparently it was a picture of the Pope. And the picture of the Pope had this guy, there was a guy standing in back of him, and he had a white shirt on beneath a dark jacket. And you know when you do that, there's like the collar and you have the two little white parts. Well, the two white parts were right above the Pope's head and made him look like Satan. And so there was a retraction in AM New York that said the editors of AM New York didn't notice the bizarre optical illusion in this AP photo of Pope Benedict XVI, which ran in Friday's issue. We apologize if the photo offended any readers. And I imagine if that was an AP photo, that probably ran in a lot of newspapers. So if you saw a picture of the Pope that looked like Satan, this time it might not be the real thing.
How do we know it's an optical illusion? It looks real to me.
That's what we're being told.
That is really funny.
Yeah. I bet the Pope's not laughing, and when he's angry, you better be careful.
Great photo. Yeah, it's a shame our listeners can't see it.
There's some good news for a change. Last week we discussed Verizon's and Bell South's egregious new fee. It was sort of this vague fee they were charging several dollars a month to all those DSL subscribers. That coincidentally was almost exactly the amount of a federal tax that's been ruled unconstitutional that they were no longer to charge customers for. And Verizon, at the pressure of the FTC, has dropped this fee. And Bell South has also. So this is good news that apparently enough people got angry. I'm hoping people that heard about this on Off the Hook called Verizon, and as well as other people, or the FCC they called, and public outrage made a difference, and people are going to be saving probably $30 some a year off their Verizon or Bell South DSL bills because people complained and said, "Hey, this isn't right. This is an unjustifiable fee."
Well, two things I think combined here: yes, widespread public outrage, but also widespread mass media coverage. You have to have those two ingredients for something to actually get to the point where a company has no choice but to back down.
And one usually triggers the other, so?
Not always. There's widespread outrage on a lot of things, but you got to get that media attention somehow. That's always tricky, and the two don't always go together. Okay, let's take a look at some listener mail. Dear Off the Hook, I'm playing catch-up right now. I'm currently listening to the June 21st show, particularly the part about mobile phones in schools. I think that mobile phones should be treated like any other electronic device, at least when I was in school, appropriate usage at the appropriate time. I used to bring my Game Boy to school all the time, even throughout high school. I do not think they should be banned. Columbine may not be fresh in our heads, but that doesn't mean it can't happen again. Signed, Daniel from, it says Daniel, Michigan 25. Is there a place called Michigan 25? Or maybe he's 25. He's putting his age at the end. That would make some
sense. Sounds right for the Game Boy thing.
Just his email address, you know, Daniel Michigan was taken, and there were 24 other people who took it.
I don't think that's it. No, I can't hand it to you because all the mail's on here. Oh. A hacker friend of mine snapped this picture today. Oh, this is from our friend Laszlo, of weird boxes being installed with poles to prevent cars from hitting them. You know, those two yellow poles that surround something. No outside outputs, only a sticker on top of it with a lightning bolt hitting a man indicating some electrical hazard. I've noticed this at 20 West 26th Street in Manhattan, and they seem to be going up all over the place. Any idea what it is? I think I know what this is. Here's a picture of it. I believe these are the bases of muni parking meter things.
That is certainly what it looks like.
Yeah, so what that means is, you ever see the muni meters? That's, I guess, the replacement for your standard old-fashioned parking meters. I hate muni meters because the machines are just so backwards.
Explain what you have to do.
You have to park your car, first of all, walk up to the muni meter machine and
use coins, right? You can't even use bills.
Put coins in it. Just like the buses. You aren't allowed to use bills. You can't use credit cards. And it's a silly, silly thing. I know they have a parking car that you can buy, but who wants to go through the trouble of that? If you're going to install new machines, at least have them be somewhat in the 1990s. Okay, so that's probably what that is. That's solving that particular issue. More mail. This is from our friend Danny B. Since I'm the one who sent you the article on the license plate scanning that was taking place in a town somewhere in New York, The number 10,000 a minute sounds way too high. I have to agree. 10,000 license plates a minute. You have to be orbiting Earth to have that number actually be attainable. If you figure a simple 1K worth of info going back and forth for each license plate, that's 10 megs a minute. You aren't going to get a wireless connection anywhere near that. It wouldn't surprise me if the system could read that number of plates a minute and perhaps store them for the Son of Sam parking ticket deal, but not process them in real time. And also in regards to reading plates on parallel parked cars, these systems, some of them at least, can also read the printed DMV stickers on the windshield, meaning the registration stickers, which, by the way, they carry a lot of information that didn't used to be on a car. You know, it's the license plate, the make and model of a car. It used to be you had to know makes and models to know exactly what kind of car you were looking at. The VIN number, printed right there in the open for you to see. So with that, you know... Well,
that's always in the open, though. That's on the dash, right?
So. Yeah, but you sort of have to... It's different in different places. Different cars have it in different places. But a decent social engineer could get more information from that.
Oh, yeah. No, it's definitely a bunch of information that... Well, it's probably accessible anyway, but just makes it easier to access. So.
And you'll be in a situation pretty soon where you'd better have everything updated when you drive your car. Insurance, inspection, registration, because there'll be sensors everywhere detecting if the slightest infraction exists. And once we go down there, there's no turning back. Dear Off the Hook, I noticed you've been talking about T-Mobile dropping messages that have naughty words in them. Over in England, a British telecom does the same thing. If you send a text message to a landline that has naughty words, it won't be sent. You don't even get a bounce report either. I'm not sure if you're still charged for the text message, but you could make plenty of they could make plenty of cash from it, especially from young kids texting naughty words to each other.
You said sign, to a landline?
Sign Brill. You sent a text message. Yeah, I did say that.
How does that work?
I don't think you can do that. That's weird because maybe British Telecom has a way where you can text a landline. I don't know because BT does have both mobile and
give us details on this. That would be
interesting. I feel like our listeners have already explained it to us because they're usually pretty on the ball about such things.
I do know if you email a T-Mobile phone from a regular email account and use some salty language in there, it does not get delivered, at least some of the time anyway. And I'd appreciate if some of our listeners or some of us can test this out and maybe.
I did. I tested it out.
You tested it out on Sprint, right?
Sprint PCS. I sent the 7 dirty words from George Carlin's monologue in order to my Sprint PCS phone, which is basically your phone number at messaging.sprintpcs.com. And it went right through. I was impressed.
Well, that's because using Sprint PCS is hard enough in the first place that if you ever get access to email, it's a miracle.
Bernie, were these separate messages, and did you do it in the reverse direction?
No, they were all words separated by a space character, all 7 words separated by a space character in one email.
Well, did you send it from your phone to an email account or just email account to the phone?
From an email account to the phone. I should probably try it the other way.
Try the other way, too. Try it both ways. And I should point out, too, that I don't think this affects SMS. I don't think this affects SMS messages phone to phone. I have not encountered that. So I'm not sure. Maybe in England they're doing it differently. Okay, speaking of indecency, dear Off the Hook, I was listening to audio from Hope Number 6 on the indecent version of Off the Hook. You mentioned that when you were younger, you saw a Monty Python skit called, I think, The Life of a Stockbroker. This skit showed a young woman bare-chested and was aired by PBS. You said of PBS they won't show that anymore. I wanted to let you know that a couple of months ago, I was watching my local PBS station out of Oklahoma. That skit was on. I was very surprised to see the bare breast on my TV. I did not report this to the damn FCC. I was not permanently scarred, and I think the skit needed it for continuity. I hate to see movies on TV that have been chopped up and blurred just to keep a few conservative family groups happy. I hope one day you can do a quality show like the one at Hope Number 6 over the airwaves. Signed, Brandon. Brandon, thank you very much. That's our hope, too. And I think what you should do in a situation like this is call the station and say, hey, thank you for playing that. That was great. You know, if they get positive responses, that counts just as much. And if enough people do that, maybe they'll realize, hey, the people complaining, they're in the minority.
Monty Python is being aired in the New York area on Channel 13 WNET. Every Sunday night at 11 and 11:30. So call them up and let them know that you appreciate the non-censored version, which is what they are airing as well.
Okay. It'd be nice if they didn't have to wait until so late at night, but that's a whole other issue. I mean, there isn't even an FCC rule against airing that thing at 11 o'clock at night. That's the so-called safe harbor. These stations don't have to do any of this, but they're doing it anyway. Cable stations don't have to do any of this. They're doing it anyway. Okay, dear Off the Hook, I've enjoyed the broadcast for some time. What is the name of your intro theme, and what is the name of the band? Signed, Little Stevie One Day. We've answered this a few times. I think we should put up like a frequently asked questions section on our website, because we keep answering the same questions a lot of times. But for your information, the band is Big Audio Dynamite, comes from a B-side single, and the name of the song is Much Worse. Okay, Bernie, I think you took some flack for this one. In the last edition of Off the Hook, Bernie referred to the British newspaper The Sun as highly reputable.
Were you on?
In no one's opinion, is The Sun a reputable newspaper? It's only one step above the National Enquirer, which is probably why Bernie couldn't find any substantiating stories for the item about gel inserts. It's interesting. Is The Sun the tabloid paper that's vehemently anti-war? Anti-Iraq War, is that another one? Because I just thought it was amazing that they have a tabloid that's anti-war. Here in this country, all the tabloids are very much for the war. And it's just weird to see it on the other side. But yeah, either way, it's not highly reputable. Do you agree, Bernie?
Yes, my tongue was planted firmly in my cheek as I was saying that. I was hoping that our listeners appreciated the irony. And this listener probably thought it was pretty amusing that I said that. And I was intending to be amusing. It's probably no better from a reputation standpoint than our National Enquirer. And, I was trying to make a joke.
Okay. Well, maybe we should have a joke indicator then, especially over the phone. We didn't know either, I don't think. When discussing the incident you discussed on the show, the British holidaymakers refusing to fly with two dark-skinned gentlemen who spoke Arabic, my friends and myself referred to those idiot passengers as sun readers, a fair description, signed minus Q. Okay, here's something interesting. This person sent this in. I love the show, guys. Keep it up. I found this website while searching for homebrewed antenna masts. Obviously, it's not about any homemade structures, but a thought crossed my mind. Ever get spam and either the script didn't work correctly and the displayed text looked like a conversation that was randomly put together? Well, this is what this page looks like. I'm wondering if there is some sort of purpose to this site. I tried digging around, but have not looked very hard. I thought I would send it your way and see what you thought. It kind of reminds me of the numbers station, but without numbers. Instead, words and phrases. Signed, Matthew from Sequim, Washington. Let me read you what's on this webpage, and I'll give out the address in just a moment. It's at the top. It just says Home 2, and it begins Home 2 and Home and Garden Centers, Augusta, Georgia. Home 2 Theories. Instead, Brinsfield Funeral Home, Leonardtown Home Decor, Home-Based Business Success Stories, Suit Facts, Newest Innovative Home Designs, Companions Knees, Coldwell Banker and Realty Home Listings, Home Guide Design Consumer, Good Albuquerque Rental Home Excitement, who insist upon seeing me.
Do a very good
what
job reading
God's
that.
God's name is going on here?
And this goes on.
It goes on.
Oh, it's really long. Yeah.
And this goes on for a full page. But not only that, inside this page are links. For instance, there's a link for mobile home movers in Ohio. And if you follow the link to mobile home movers from Ohio, you get something that is almost exactly the same with different words. Hang on, it's right here we go. Mobile home movers in Ohio and recommended work at home opportunities. Mobile home movers in Ohio, quote, I fished about with a rake. Mr. Ranch Home, they never closed the quote either. Mr. Ranch Home Design, Home Safety Product, Home Security Solutions, a cap log, home house plans, either end to make holiday home. Budapest, home bombs, home refinancing, mobile home movers in Ohio, that was in bold, Geneva Home Improvement. All right, you guys have any clue as to what this is about?
Yes.
Go ahead.
This is, all right, so the way Google's ranking and maybe some other search engines by now rank web pages is by obviously the relativity of the content and also by how many sites link to the content. And so this is standard practice in many web pages where at the bottom of the page you'll see a whole bunch of blank space and usually mm-hmm. it's just white text that has a bunch of, you know, irrelevant stuff but search terms that may be used to find that page. And so this is a combination of that and linking to themselves to sort of manipulate Google's page rank system to
But what happens when people get to this page? Do they feel like they've gotten an answer to something?
I've seen pages like this where there's advertising all over, and so they get advertising hits for it. I've seen pages like this where there are actually links to real pages, and it's sort of mostly an advertising scheme. But this one's kind of odd in that there is none of that on the page, and so I don't know.
And it just keeps linking to other pages. It's really scary when you're reading this. It's like you've lost your mind or something, and nothing makes any sense anymore. And you've entered this alternate universe. The webpage itself is located at home2.org. I'll read that again. home2, number 2, dot 2, BEGEMOSS.org. And you can read to your heart's content. There's no secret meaning to this, then. This all makes sense to you.
Well, I've seen this kind of strategy used before and in another context, but, you know, it's the same sort of situation here.
This is probably just some kind of scam for advertising. I mean, let's say the domain was, like, something legitimate or halfly legitimate. They could have been trying to raise their page rank and then maybe try to sell the domain while the page rank was still high or something. But there's really no ads on this thing, so maybe they're trying to make money somehow.
All right. Well, that's always the motivation in the end. And then there are these bits of email, which I'm sure we've all seen. I looked at our spam folder because all of it goes to the spam folder. But I delved into there today to find one of these things just to read over the air. And it's from Mike Lindsay. I'll give out his email address because I think I should. It's rzqps@swmedsource.com. And yes, won't you send him an email or 10? The subject is Night Table Right Hand, and it begins, "So far all had happened as Dramana told us that it must. When we had finished our food, we packed up our small belongings in the most convenient way we could. So we went away, but I, lingering behind, examined the hole and the pin very carefully. I ate as much as I was able because food gives strength, and Hans did the same. Out of the mouth of the cave emerged two priests. I suppose that the priests grew suspicious and set one of their numbers to watch. But that would not save the Lady Sabila, Hans, or it may have been because of the great flood, which is rising fast." Okay, you see, this is something different. It's got sentence structure, and it seems to be the same text. It might even be a quote from something because the same characters keep getting referred to. But I'm seeing spam like this all over the place. What's this? What's the game behind this one?
Well, sometimes they send out mail that has a plain text version that is something like what you just read, and an HTML version, which is like, buy drugs now. Yeah. And a lot of people see the HTML version, but sometimes spam filters and your email program see the text version. So that might be the reason.
But what is the purpose of the text?
To fool the spam filter into thinking it's a legitimate email.
All right, but it's not fooling any of my spam filters.
Well, you know, that's good.
Fools mine.
I'm dying to know what happens to Hans.
Well, I'll hand you this page, and you can read the rest of it. I should point out, too, at the bottom there was a picture attachment, so maybe click on that.
Yeah, the picture could have been a lot of these picture drug ads now.
Uh-huh. So they're ads? They're not viruses or malware or
could
spyware
be, but
or things like
usually
that?
Usually it's an ad.
Well, when I look at these things in Thunderbird, when it doesn't filter them out, at first the text would flash by, but then it would realize that there's HTML, and then it would bring up this, like, HTML block of, like, you know, buy drugs or buy whatever from us. So it's just advertising.
Mm-hmm. Bernie?
Yes, I got a piece of spam like that the other day. And the text was equally fascinating. So I plugged it into a search engine, Google in this case, just to see where this semi-sensible prose came from. And I found it on the Gutenberg, the Australian Project Gutenberg, as a book, as an e-book. So the spammers are stealing text from e-books.
Well, either that or Project Gutenberg is making a book of spam.
inadvertently, but I thought it was pretty intriguing that this is apparently only available on this e-book from the Australian Project Gutenberg.
That's probably the source of all these messages. I guess it's a good source for them. But the good news is you can find out what happens to Hans then if you just go.
Well, yeah.
Wouldn't it be more brilliant for them to actually put this in white text on the page where they're actually selling the Viagra or whatever else they're advertising?
They probably,
because it would refer back to them. Uh-huh. So even if you're trying to avoid them, you get back to them.
Yeah. Well,
there are people on the internet who make poetry out of spam. So maybe you can collaborate with them.
Okay, and our final letter, and then we'll take phone calls, 212-209-2900. Please give us a call. Dear Off the Hook, for the past few days, I've been attempting to download the latest MP3 of Off the Hook. I've tried both iTunes, a simple download off your website, but the downloads either drop out or stall. Stephen, thanks for sending that to us. Yes, we had massive problems over the weekend, and the reason for that was because the audio from the Hope No. 6 conference was put up, all of the audio, And we put it up in high fidelity mode, and that turned out to be our downfall because everybody in the world seemed to want that, and nobody could get anything. So unfortunately, what we've had to do is limit access to just the 16 kbps versions, which isn't the best sound, but otherwise nobody would be able to get anything. You can get a DVD of all the audio. It's available on our website. And in addition, all the videos are now available as well. So please check that out. And of course, by getting those videos and getting that DVD, you help to support us so that we can have bandwidth in the first place. And unfortunately, we just reached the maximum. And we have a good number, a good amount of bandwidth, but we just could not handle that. And I guess it's good that so many people want it. So many people wanted the audio of the conference. And again, if you get the audio of the conference, you're more than welcome to spread it around. Same with the video. Just make sure people know where it came from. Okay, 212-209-2900. Wait for the phone lines to light up. Again, our regular snail mail address.
I'm stealing my line back.
No, you're not.
Yes, I am.
You're not. I'm turning your microphone off.
Aww.
You see, I have final control over these things. Kevin replaced you, right? Okay. All right, here we go. Email address, oth@2600.com. Snail mail address is off the hook, care of WBAI. Exciting, isn't it? 120 Wall Street.
10th floor.
New York.
New York.
10005.
It's not my fault you turned down the wrong pot.
I turned down your mic.
Hello,
how's
test
that possible?
Two.
You're gray. Oh, you're black. Oh, you know.
It's very confusing. You turned me off, and I wasn't going
to
say anything.
So Kevin didn't get to say his line.
Right? So sad.
Ah, okay.
But he's not Kevin, so it doesn't matter.
We'll talk after the show about
He'll
this.
Have to give the, like, plus four, the zip plus
send
four.
Send us mail. Not enough people send us physical mail. We like to get that. All right, 212-209-2900. Let's take a phone call. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up, please.
Hello.
Hi, how you doing?
Hi. I have a copy of the latest issue of Foreign Affairs, the publishing arm of the Council on Foreign Relations. It has an article, by Evan F. Coleman, entitled The Real Online Terrorist Threat. And in this, he says, we don't have to worry about cyber attacks. He says, fears of such science fiction scenarios have led policymakers to overlook the fact that terrorists currently use the internet as a cheap and efficient way of communicating and organizing. Jihadists are typically organized in small, widely dispersed units and coordinate their activities online, obviating the need for a central command. Al-Qaeda and similar groups rely on the internet to contact potential recruits and donors, sway public opinion, instruct would-be terrorists, pool tactics and knowledge, and organize attacks. The RAND Corporation's David Ronfelt and John Arkia have called this phenomenon, quote, net war, which they define as a form of conflict marked by the use of network forms of organization and related doctrines, strategies, and technologies.
Okay, sir, I got to cut you off because we only have a few minutes, but do you have any kind of statement you want to make about that?
Well, yes. Mostly... To the point where he says, in many ways, such groups use the internet in the same way that peaceful political organizations do. What makes terrorists' activity threatening is their intent.
Okay.
So I just want to hear your comments on that. Thank you so much.
Thanks. Well, you know, I think it's reached the point where the internet is kind of like oxygen. Everybody has it now, and it's not the threat. It's just something that's a reality that's there, and we're going to have to figure out ways of dealing with nasty people in whatever form they happen to be in.
And it's another case of the same technology that's being used for good, you know, cryptography and all this stuff that keeps our information secure and private and also keeps their information secure and private, and you can't limit access to that sort of thing. So.
Okay, taking another phone call. Good evening. You're on the air. Speak up. Okay, you gotta speak up quickly, folks. Good evening. You're on the air. All right, I didn't mean to scare people away, though. Good evening. You're on the air. Go ahead.
Hi. Great show, by the way.
Thank you.
In the case where the guy was pirating the software,
mm-hmm.
Now they said that he has to pay, right?
Right.
If he pays that amount, and the people who bought that software need tech support, would that company provide it?
That's a good question. I'm not sure exactly how he was giving out the information of the software he was selling, whether he was using legitimate codes or anything that would work with the company that actually made the software. It seems monumentally stupid to sell something fraudulently with a bad code that someone's going to try and use, and it's going to come back to you as the person who perpetrated it in the first place.
So therefore, if what I was trying to find out is, if the guy pays the amount, the money, that the penalty, right?
Mm-hmm.
So the people, I guess you had answered it before. The people are the ones who are at a loss.
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
All right. Thanks for your call. Let's squeeze in one or two more. Good evening. You're on the air.
Emmanuel.
Yes, go ahead.
Hey, I wanted to tell you that I listened. I was able to download some of the high quality stuff from Hope, and the uncensored show you guys did was great.
Well, thank you. Hopefully one day people over the radio will be able to hear that as well.
Yeah, I hope so too. And I got about half the shows. I'm going to probably put on a torrent or something.
Sounds good. Yeah, hopefully a torrent will show up. But please encourage people to get the videos too, because we broke our asses over these things.
Okay, man.
All right, take care. Good evening. You're on the air.
Okay.
Hello. Yes, go ahead. You okay?
Yeah.
What's on your mind?
I just got some information in my phone bill, and I'm wondering if it makes any sense from Verizon. They're talking about answering machines and their default codes.
Oh, yeah. You know, they did this about a month ago where they basically just issued a proclamation saying everyone should change their passwords because people can get in and do evil things, and no doubt hackers are behind it all. And this is stuff that we've known since the 1980s. There's nothing new here.
Yeah, but they're talking about programming it to accept, collect, and third-party calls. A simple answering machine that just has its default on?
I don't know of any operator that would be fooled by an answering machine accepting a collect call. Unless someone could get into your answering machine. Actually, we've played around with this in the past. They can get into your answering machine and change the outgoing message to say, hello, yes, I accept the collect call. And that might work. That doesn't work, Mike?
Wait, collect calls are not handled by human operators.
That's right. They're not even handled by human operators anymore. So
they're handled by touch tones, usually. You could put a touch tone on an answering machine.
You would be extremely hard-pressed to be able to do this. And it's just so easy to make phone calls without making them collect anyway these days for nothing. Okay, one more call I think we have time for. Good evening. You're on the air.
Might work. That doesn't work, Mike?
Yes, that's my voice. Now let's hear your voice.
Hello.
Hey, what's on your mind? Go ahead.
Hi. Just a quick thing to maybe wake up the NSA people. URL for the TV station is www.manartv.com.lb.
Oh, boy. Okay. And do they have a stream on there?
Yeah, they have. I found French, German, and English streams.
Wow. So it's Manar TV, M-A-N-A-R-TV. .com.lb?
Yep.
Awesome. All right. Thanks
There's
so much.
www
in front of it. Okay. Yeah. Thanks for letting us know that. That's some good information to close on. And we're going to have to close on that because the aforementioned Personal Computer Show is coming up next. We'll be back again next week with another exciting show. Until then, have a good night. Write to us, oth@2600.com.
Too much, too much promiscuity can drive to insanity. Said too much, too much insanity can drive to criminality. Say, oh, set me free. Whoa, let me be. Too much, too much promiscuity can drive to calamity. Hypocrisy can drop to academy. Too much morality can drop to criminality. Oh, set me free. Oh, let me be. Too much hypocrisy can drop to criminality. Too much, Willy.
Sapiens.